Gray Wolf Computer Systems has provided a grant in support of this program. Gray Wolf Computer Systems offers custom computer systems and personalized service for repairs, upgrades, and networks in the East Cliff Village Shopping Center in Santa Cruz. It is Friday, September 10th, 2004, 10:04 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. It's time now for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. My name's Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP or its board, the Pataphysical Broadcasting Foundation. Today on Geek Speak, we're talking about digital radio, the good and the bad. During the second half of the show, I welcome you to join our conversation. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Of course, you can go to geekspeak.org and send us an email from there. Welcome to Geek Speak. I'm Lyle Troxell. In the air with me, I have Geek Miles Elam. Miles and I are going to do a little bit of news. Sir, please.
Well, this is something that's just on the top of the news, which I'm reading now off Slashdot. The space station is dogged by oxygen problems. There are three generators, oxygen generators on the International Space Station, and they have all failed. They were all made by... They're all called Electron.
Aren't there people there? I mean, isn't that a problem?
Yeah.
it's one of those things when I'm in space, I want oxygen. I mean, I don't know. How about you?
But in addition to that, the three Electron units on board are the last of their kind. The company that manufactured them has gone out of business. And the engineer who almost single-handedly made the final adjustments of flight units died several years ago taking... quite a few trade secrets along with him.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to laugh at his passing, but it is sad to me that the experts on the...
The International Space Station just like, this. Ow, that hurts. Bam, 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 I'm going to hit you some more. Bam, bam, bam.
So I would assume they're handling the situation.
NASA is not alarmed.
Okay.
In their press release, they are not alarmed.
All right, good. Next item, sir.
The space capsule. People have heard about it, but basically this, we talked about it last week, about
the
trying to collect, yes, the Genesis probe collecting solar particles, and it fell to the Earth, parachute did not open, and augured into the ground at 193 miles per hour.
I guess at least the helicopter wasn't under it.
Yes, but it did not completely shatter and disperse the product, so it's still up in the air whether they can get data from it, useful
Miles,
information from it.
Up in the air is a good metaphor sometimes. In this case, no. It's very much in the ground. You got another story for us, sir? Please.
Yes.
Move along.
As soon as my exposé works. Okay. A smelly robot eats flies to generate its own power.
Good. Next story. What?
A robot has been created that goes into dangerous or inhospitable areas to carry out remote industrial or military monitoring, say temperature and toxic gas concentrations.
Okay. Hence the smelling aspect.
Yes.
Okay, so it can smell, not that it does smell.
But to generate its own power, it actually attracts and then consumes flies.
Yeah, that makes sense. Really? Wow.
Yes. It catches flies and digests them in special fuel cells that break down sugar in the insect's skeleton.
Machines using biology, using animals to power themselves.
Yes, truth is stranger than fiction.
Okay. Like a bicycle, almost that freaky. So, that's really creepy. Is this thing actually moving? Is it doing its thing now? Or are they just testing it?
I believe it's still in the testing phase.
Okay.
I haven't followed the story very closely.
You know, what we need is like... bug repellent machines that are powered off mosquito carcasses, and then you got everything you need.
I prefer to have a mosquito eating fish pond, personally.
Yeah, fish ponds are nice. And the next story:
Longhorn is set to cut off support for different music sharing devices, including iPods and other portable storage devices.
But by the time it gets out, we won't be listening to music anymore, so
right,
it doesn't matter.
So I guess it doesn't
Longhorn matter. Orchestra is the next revision of Microsoft Windows. And they're basically going to they're towing to the music industry, it sounds like.
Apparently, it wasn't the music industry per se. They were talking about different IT departments in companies. The fact that the employees will spend so much time downloading music and using company resources to do music sharing or, you know, use hard drives for purposes other than what their job is. So that's actually been the big push rather than the RIAA.
All right. Well, Miles, thank you for coming in today, unlike Sean and John, who didn't make it today, and covering some news stories. I'd like to go ahead and ask now for your last news story of the day, sir.
Sybase releases a free enterprise database on Linux.
What is Sybase?
Sybase is a relational database management system.
Like Oracle and MySQL.
In fact, it was very much on par with Oracle at one point, okay. A very strong competitor. And it was the Sybase code that actually formed the basis of Microsoft's SQL Server product,
okay.
Although they have since diverged. But now, if you have a Linux system and you are working on one CPU, up to 2 gigabytes of RAM, and up to 5 gigabytes of data, then you can download this this database and use it for free.
Very cool. Well, Miles, thank you very much for the update on the news and for being here.
That's it. I'm out of here.
The topic for the day, we're talking about digital radio, and we're talking about how it's coming down the pipe. HD TV is here. Some people have used the term HD radio for the new digital age of radio. We have, to debunk a little bit about digital radio and to talk a little bit about the technology, we've invited the KOSP station manager or general manager, Terry Green, and the engineer, station KOSP engineer, Brad Harrett, to come along and talk to us a little bit about digital radio. What is this beast that is sweeping the airwaves? Not that it is. Terry and Brant, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Thank you, Lyle.
Thanks, Lyle.
It's a pleasure to have you both here. Let's just start out. What the heck is different from digital radio and traditional radio, which we're listening to now?
I'll try and make this simple. What is coming down the line is there is a they've come up with a method to put a digital signal on the same frequency as our regular analog signal.
Okay.
And it's called in-band on-channel, which means you don't have to go buy new radios. You don't have to do anything.
So the old stuff's still supported, and it's going
right.
to add new stuff.
Right. It's kind of like when FM stereo came along, the FCC mandated that it had to be compatible with the old mono radios. Same thing with TV when they had color.
Right.
That also had to be compatible with
black
and white.
Doesn't this to some degree limit the technology that can be put in place?
That's quite true. We can probably talk about that later.
Again, there's millions and millions of radios out there, so making them all useless would be kind of a shame.
At one point, the Consumer Electronics Trade Lobby estimated that there's actually, in the United States, there are 1 billion working radios.
Wow. That's a lot more than people.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, people aren't going to go out and replace their clock radios in their kitchen.
Right. And think about your house. I mean, the number of different radios that that are either sitting in your driveway or sitting in your garage or your bedroom,
that's so
kitchen.
Funny. Even without my cars, I have stacks of radios in my driveway. How'd you know that, Terry?
Well.
So basically they say, okay, and it makes sense. Make sure it's backwards compatible so we don't destroy the use of all this equipment.
Right.
So how do they and it's digital. But that's in general what I knew about it. When we talk about transmission, though, in reality, it is an analog signal being transmitted. It's not like you can send zeros and ones over the ether. So,
in a lot of ways, it works the same way that Ethernet works. I mean, Ethernet is still a
analog signal.
Yeah, it's voltages that are changing on a pair of wires,
mm-hmm.
and the digital radio signal has that kind of same characteristic.
Okay.
So if you're kind of looking for an analogy.
And it's similar to the thing that we were most common about right now with the merge from analog to digital is the whole people are using modems on their 56K mm-hmm. modems versus DSL, and it uses the same wires, very similar mm-hmm. to we're using the same transmission for digital radio. Mm-hmm. And it also has its digital quality to it. It's information is sent in a non-degradable form.
Yeah.
So, okay. Is it just all great and everything's wonderful with this technology?
That would be the first technology in history.
Color TV, pretty successful. Stereo FM, really successful.
Right, but if you look at the technologies that came after NTSC color, for instance, PAL in Europe is far superior to NTSC color.
Okay.
You know, NTSC isn't standing for not the same color.
or never twice the same
right.
color.
Depending upon how you look at it. And FM stereo, although, has been quite successful given the age of the technology. It's hard to say what's going to happen with this is all happening on the fly. As we speak, for all I know, Ubiquiti, who is the overriding company that has the proprietary patents on HD radio, could be changing things as we speak about how HD radio is going to actually finally end up. This is an emerging technology. It's not fixed yet.
Okay, so it's not fixed, but are stations starting to implement?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, indeed they are.
How can they do that if it's not fixed?
It's a better analogy for me, I think, is thinking about any time you, like on a computer, that you adopt a new operating system. I mean, let's take Windows XP, for example. I mean, Windows XP is not, you know, really a fixed technology.
Right.
But, you know, there's been, one major and one, minor revision that was pretty fundamental and lots of changes along the way. Mm-hmm. And because so much of current digital technology is in a sense software-based, it never is fixed in the same way that FM stereo was. I mean, the FM stereo standard that was adopted in 1960 is exactly how we're transmitting this signal on KUSP right this minute. That sort of stability and predictability isn't going to be part of digital radio, just as it's not part of digital TV either.
Okay, so there's going to be some changes.
And that's also what makes it technologically kind of a challenge, is that you have to preserve some degree of compatibility so that the people who bought radios early on still have at least the features that those radios had.
Right. Now,
as you go along.
This isn't the first widely distributed or planned to widely distribute digital technology over FM carriers. We have RDS, which is how paging systems work and how some radios like Miles's Prius get the station letters in the radio. So
or
that
the
has
current song playing.
Or the current song playing, yeah. Now that's called, RDS stands for Radio Digital System.
Right.
But that's not for carrying the actual audio. And
right.
The new system is going to be carrying audio.
Correct. Right. And there will be an additional program-associated data that will be transmitted as
that will
part.
Give that information as
we'll
well.
Give that information. There's some discussion right now exactly how people who are currently using RDS or RDBS.
That's right. Sorry.
How compatible that's going to be with IBOC.
What's IBOC?
In-band on-channel. I'm sorry.
Oh,
HD
okay.
radio.
So. Okay.
I use them interchangeably.
No, but you keep on saying HD radio, but I know HD from the television world where it's being federally mandated and it
right.
has a potential for a better signal, a much better signal.
That is the marketing words that are coming out of Ubiquiti. They are calling it HD radio.
Which stands for high-definition radio?
I have no idea what it stands for. If you go up to the Ubiquiti website, it's hard to find a definition about what HD radio really means.
Okay, you two know a little bit about radio. And
thank you for saying
a little bit, anyway.
Terry, your background is actually as an engineer.
That's true.
And Brandt is your engineer for here at KUSP. You've heard this. You've gone in a B. You've heard the technology. You've sampled it.
Right.
Is it higher definition than current FM transmission?
Again, the part of the charm.
I want a
this,
yes or no
right,
here.
Right.
Okay,
no,
go on. Terry.
Yeah, this is not a yes or no answer.
Okay, go on.
Right. Like so many things in that are evolving or emerging technologies, it's never the same. 2 months in a row.
Right. So you hear it, and you go, "Oh, that's bad," and then someone goes, "Oh, no, but this
it's
is
much
a
better
codec.
This
now
month."
It's better this
right.
month. And so you hear something a little
right.
better, or you hear something worse.
Well,
it's hard. It has been hard for me to keep up. When I had a simpler job, it was easier for me to go to the conferences and
geek out. Yeah.
Yeah. And as in the listening tests that were happening as they evaluated this technology, and this project has been going on for the better part of 15 years,
uh-huh.
The quality of the audio that has come out of the prototype receivers has gone up and down over time.
Has it ever surpassed what we currently have?
It depends on what you're looking for.
Okay, Terry, stop a second. Brant, what's your opinion?
opinions vary on this.
and Terry, let me hear yours, Brant. What's your opinion? I mean, let me ask you this.
Let me tell you what the prime claim to fame is about digital radio.
Okay.
It is supposed to be excellent at getting rid of multipath problems. And like if you drive around Santa Cruz and listen to KUSP and you get into a hilly area, you'll hear it going, which is multipath.
Okay. Digital radio. It basically means that your radio is getting multiple copies of the signal because it's bouncing off something.
Right.
Okay.
So digital radio takes care of that, and you lose all that multipath noise.
So in a lot of ways, that one of the strengths is its better coverage.
But there are analog methods that can eliminate multipath that already exist. Motorola has a chipset out that already does this.
Well, this seems really strange to me for us to be talking about multipath with respect to the information that's being transmitted. It's not just the actual. I mean, your transmitter is not going to change. It's still going to be 88.9 as the major carrier. It's still going to be frequency modulated. It's still going to be 100 megahertz wide. But it's not. So that's not changing. So why is the signal so important?
Well,
the data. Let's
talk a little bit about how this actually works in the radio.
Okay.
Okay. If you're driving around with your HD-capable radio and you're within a signal, if you can get a strong enough digital signal, it will play in digital. When you start getting into a fringe area where the digital signal starts to deteriorate, it will blend into analog and go back to the analog signal.
Okay.
Which will have a farther coverage in general.
All right.
Okay. So there's some discussion about exactly where that's going to take place, what's going
to... And that's going to have to do with the radios, which are going to have to be a lot smarter.
Yes.
Okay. But, I felt like I asked you guys a question, and then we kind of answered it, but I didn't...
Right.
Okay, let's talk about currently KOSP's... transmission.
Mm-hmm.
We have classical shows every day of the week starting at 7, I believe, Terry?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, first Monday through Thursday.
Monday through Thursday.
And then on Sunday, too.
Yeah. And traditionally, classical music, you want it to be pretty clean. You don't want it to be
distorted.
You care very
much about audio quality in class. You also care very much about audio quality in jazz, and we're the only jazz station in the area.
Right,
right.
So those things are kind of our part of our major focus, mm-hmm. and one of the things we do to make sure that our quality is good is that we don't over-compress our signal.
Right.
And compression, Brant, quick, stab at compression. Okay, I'll do it. Basically, taking the lower-sounding sounds, or the quieter sounds, and bringing them up a little bit higher. So you basically have almost all the sound that's coming out is loud.
It's
and that's really good for commercial stations where when you turn to them, it's like, oh, I'm there. But for classical music, for example, not so good because you're distorting the actual... Well, for anything, you're distorting what the sound actually sounds like. So KOSP has low compression on the sound channel. Is that right, guys?
Yes.
Okay. I got a yes from them.
Depending on the format.
Oh, depending on the format.
On the more rock oriented shows, there are methods used here in the station that they can compress it a little hotter.
Okay.
And a lot of the material itself is already compressed, sitting on the CD.
Right. But it depends on.
We'll use yes as an answer to the question and move on.
Thanks. Okay. So great. We have good quality sound. So does that mean that? I mean, is that good quality sound still going to be there when and if we implement digital radio?
One of the reasons you choose to compress either a little or a lot in FM radio is because relative to other kinds of audio sources, FM is kind of noisy.
Uh-huh.
The level of background noise that you get in analog FM is better than it is in analog AM.
Right.
But it's not as good as most of the other...
Especially when you're driving around, you get a little bit of multipath going on.
Uh-huh. Right. Mm-hmm. One of the advantages to doing digital audio, if you do it right, is that the perceived background noise levels lower.
Right.
And most of these digital audio coding schemes that have been, developed for digital FM do a good job of that. So if you're listening to a classical music piece with a lot of dynamic range through this technology, that in that sense, in the sense of background noise, it sounds more like a CD, more like a, you know, a well-preserved LP, you know, that doesn't have a lot of scratches and surface noise on it, than FM broadcasting does now. And I think that, in the right circumstances, that's an advantage of this technology.
Now, growing up,
but it's not a big advantage.
Brent?
One of the things that has been going on in the engineering world, as we've been discussing this, is that the audio codecs that are being used have changed three times now.
And in a very fundamental way.
Yes.
Like, let's start over.
The latest codec was generated because the previous one did not work for AM very well at all. So, anyhow, one of the arguments that the more discerning engineers, a la recording engineers, they have said that they hear major artifact problems in classical and in jazz with the current codec.
Okay. The most recent. The most recent.
Oh. Mm-hmm. What you have to consider with that is, so it really, I think, depends on format. If you're in your car, I don't think it really matters a lot, because I don't think you're going to hear the artifacts. It's possible, and I have to use the word possible because, again, this is all emerging and things could be different tomorrow, is that if you're a true audiophile sitting in your house with your Razoo stereo system and you're trying to listen to a digital audio signal, you may not be completely happy with what you're getting.
But then again, you're getting not just the... I mean, in that situation, they're never going to be completely happy with FM. It just doesn't have the dynamic range as even a CD player.
That's correct.
So... what they are getting from the station, though, is the expertise of the people that are pulling the music together and the show quality in general.
Right.
And then they can go make the determination of, wow, that song or that band that, you know, came on Talk of the Bay, or excuse me, not Talk of the Bay, but Open Road, for example, I want to listen, I want to own that. So there's there's more to just the quality. I hear this argument, I mean, growing up at KOSP and knowing a lot of people that are audiophiles, people that program music all the time, that listen to music all the time, we moved when I, you know, years ago, when before CDs, there was a lot more albums around vinyl. Case in the Walls in this room, for example. And when people, when CDs started coming out, there was a lot of engineers here, the programmers, that didn't like the CD quality because they felt that it was weaker and it wasn't as good because it was digital and it was losing something. And when you take the average listener and you have them with really good headphones and everything, you have them play a CD and then play a record player that has no scratches or pops on it, they're not going to really hear the difference in a lot of ways. So is this another case that you have to be, you have to have really good equipment and you have to be an expert to be able to tell the difference between this most recent codec and what we hear right now on KOSP?
I think most people whose judgment I've trust that have stayed more current with this than I do feel that, especially in classical and jazz types of presentation, that there is a noticeable difference. Whether it's objectionable or not, whether it's something that would make you listen less or not listen at all, I think more people don't feel that that's true.
Okay.
You know, that, that there is a difference.
Right.
But it's not so much so that you'd quit listening or you'd listen a lot less.
I mean, people listen to AM. I mean, there's obviously people that don't mind it.
People listen to MP3, too.
Yeah.
Right.
A lot of people listen to MP3.
And you know, if you're used to listening to MP3 and then you all of a sudden go to a live concert and hear the same band, you're going to probably fall over in shock. Because of the difference in the sound quality. But that doesn't mean that, that people are unhappy with it, listening to MP3.
Doesn't a lot of that have to do with the equipment they're listening through, the speakers, the headphones, whatever? I mean, when we talk about billions of radios being in the U.S., not all of those, not all billion of those radios are good quality, right?
Right.
So there's a lot of low-quality, shoddy stuff that's cheap.
Right.
And, you know, we're pretty...
Well, CDs have always been recorded to be played on substandard speakers. They aren't made to be the exact representation of the music as far as they can go. They actually are mastered so that they sound good on someone's little dinky stereo in their bedroom.
That's correct.
But the fact of the matter is there have been, you know, this quality trade-off has existed since the beginning of recorded sound.
Yeah.
I mean, and certainly since the beginning of broadcasting. So the change from analog to digital doesn't really change
that. We're not talking about a binary state of good, better, or worse. Right? We don't have that.
You're still
ability.
Throwing information away when you digitize something. So,
But, you know, we're throwing information away when we go through the filters and the limiters that, that power KOSP's audio
analog
stream
system,
as well.
Yeah, right.
So,
and we throw information away when we turn our radio off. So,
I think there's a, and you know, I don't want to cut this part of the discussion off. I think that for a station like KUSP, the more fundamental issues about digital FM, whether it's a good idea or a bad idea, whether it's a good use of our listeners' support or not, which is, you know, kind of the management perspective on a lot of these things. You know, if I were the listener, would I want, you know, if I were just a listener subscriber to KUSP, would I want us to do that or not? Has to do with the fact that there is a very basic difference between digital FM and analog FM, and that is the capability of having two reasonably high quality audio streams in the same amount of channel space that we've previously occupied with one stereo signal.
So the
expectation, especially for public radio stations over the development of this have cared a whole lot more about this than commercial stations have. There is the possibility, in if KUSP were to convert to digital at all, I think there'd be a strong likelihood that there would be a KUSP 1 and a KUSP 2. And you could choose between the two, just like you can right now choose between one station and another. Mm-hmm. So instead of right now on the Central Coast, Monterey, Salinas, Santa Cruz area, there are a total of 15 non-commercial stations with a large enough audience to measure, you know, using the radio research techniques that we use around here. And those 15 stations have about 10 different programming streams because, you know, like for us, we have KUSP in the Santa Cruz and Salinas and Monterey areas, and KBDH serving southern Monterey County, northern San Luis Obispo. So that I'm counting that as two of these, you know, 15 stations.
Mm-hmm.
All right?
Okay.
So there's about 10 different programs to pick from
right
now.
Because we carry the same thing on KUSP as we do as KBDH.
Exactly. So that could go from 10 to 20 if all of us converted to digital.
And that right there would be better for listeners, more choice.
I think so.
Okay. Let's continue this conversation.
Right.
And also about how much it's going to cost if we decide to go this way. This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com.
This week in This American Life. Years ago, Marty had to convince a fellow Republican, a very conservative one, to vote a certain way. So he brought in a conservative icon, Jesse Helms, to try to talk some sense into the guy. But the guy wouldn't budge.
I said, well, why? And he said, well, Jesse Helms just doesn't completely understand the conservative movement.
Inside the Republican big tent, their struggles at becoming our majority party this week.
Catch This American Life Sunday at 10 a.m. on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP.
This program is supported by a grant from Cruise.io, providing internet services including DSL, spam filters, PHP, MySQL, now with nationwide access. Information about Cruise.io membership is available online at cruise.io.com or by calling 459-6301. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. The other geek in the air room is Miles Elam. And the two special geeks today, Terry Green and Brent Herrick. We're talking about digital radio. We welcome you to join the conversation. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Of course, you can send us email by going to geekspeak.org and clicking on Contact Us. Brant Herrick, of course, is the KUSP engineer, and Terry Green, the station or general manager of KUSP.
The business card says general manager, you know, same thing.
Right.
Women Rise for Global Peace presents their September Project in the Park, an afternoon of entertainment and conversation in support of the Friends of the Santa Cruz Public Library's events, on Saturday, September 11th, from 2:30 to 4:30 p.m. in San Lorenzo Park at the Duck Pond in Santa Cruz. For information, call 429-8829.
Today we're taking your calls about digital radio and about KUSP. We've got two experts on KUSP, and they know a little bit about digital radio and radio in general. You're welcome to call in on any of those topics. The phone number is 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Of course, you're listening to GeekSpeak. You can go to geekspeak.org, click on Contact Us to send us email for us to answer on air. Terry, Brant, how much, if we decide to go to digital radio, how much would it cost to upgrade everything to do that or to install the stuff we need to do that? Rough ballpark figure.
Part of that involves changing some of the equipment in the studios, a project that we need to do anyway.
Okay, so there's some
so if we're just talking about the part that has to do with transmitting the digital signal to the listener,
yeah,
the only advantage to doing this would be the things that we've been talking about on the show today. To do it for our – we don't honestly know how much it would cost to do it for all of KUSP. One of the things about our station that's different from a lot of radio stations, even a lot of public stations, is that we have a lot of different transmitters. You know, if you listen to
a large
our,
coverage area.
Right. Not only a big coverage area, but we have to do it through – because of the terrain here, we have to do it from – with a number of translators. You know, if you listen three times a day, we have this nice list of all the different places around the Central Coast where we come out on a different frequency than 88.9, which is our main signal that covers Salinas and Monterey and most of Santa Cruz. The technology that would let us do digital for these kind of outlying communities like Big Sur and Palo Colorado Canyon isn't fully developed yet. It isn't even partly developed yet. It's maybe a tiny part.
Does that have to do with how we're feeding that transmitter?
Partly has to do with that, and partly has to do with how you, in an affordable way, actually, amplify the signal and broadcast it. So we don't know how much that part of KUSP would really cost to convert. We have a better idea for what it would cost to change over the 88.9 channel and the 91.7 channel, which is where we come out on KBDH in southern Monterey County and northern San Luis Obispo County. And each of those, it is probably in the ballpark of $75,000.
Wow.
To do one or the other, and they both cost about the same.
And that has to do with the equipment that goes in the studio and also at the transmitter?
This is mostly just the transmitting part.
Because, okay,
as I said kind of at the start of this, there's a lot of things we need to do here at the KUSP studio in Santa Cruz to make it easier to move digital audio around, since most of the stuff that we get from someplace else, which is a significant part of our schedule, comes into the station in a digital form now. And we need to be able to change the way we maneuver audio around the radio station to improve reliability and make it possible to do cooler radio easier. So we're going to make that investment no matter what happens. But we have a choice to make about the investment at the transmitter site that would let us go from the way we transmit things now to a digital environment where there could be, a KUSP1 and a KUSP2, say.
From Monterey, we've got a question that doesn't pertain to radio. Tom, welcome to Geek Speak.
You don't have Tom.
Oh, okay. Well, go ahead and speak to me.
My name's Robin. I'm calling from Templeton.
And you've been, go on, yes.
I've been dying to ask this question. Could you explain what the signal path is for KBDH? I have to tell you that it's very strange sounding at times.
we agree. And we're trying to fix that.
One of the things that Terry was talking about in terms of upgrading our delivery path is a major change in how we're delivering audio to Southern Monterey County. It's really complicated, but just suffice it to say that we pick up an off-air signal in Gilroy and magically transport it down to King City, where it goes up to the transmitter site.
Wait a second. This is Geek Speak. You can't use magic when talking about technology.
Yeah, I'm interested in the specifics.
You want the specifics?
Okay, so it sounds like it's got sync buzz on it a lot of the time, so
okay.
I suspect that you're riding along with somebody's TV signal.
Well, see, you already answered your own question.
This is just a conjecture.
No, I'll give you the details. We are currently receiving our off-air signal at a head end of the cable company, where we then put it on a subcarrier that rides along the KQED TV signal all the way down to King City, where we grab it off at the head end or at the office down there in King City, and then beam it up on an analog STL up to Williams Hill, which is where our transmitter is.
Which is, I can see it out my kitchen window, and it's about 38 miles, I think, north of here.
And you get a great signal.
I get a great signal, and, the audio quality is wonderful. It's by far the best-sounding station on the dial, and I can live with the noise.
Well, good.
But it's curious. And I don't even care if it's mono.
So, is it a mono signal in KDH?
Currently it is.
So this is some of the equipment stuff that we need to do anyway.
Absolutely.
It has nothing to do with digital. So basically, when you talk about picking off air, you mean that there's a really nice radio down there that's tuned to 88.9 to our main signal.
Right.
And then from there, the outputs of that, instead of going playing to the speakers, they go into a sub-channel of a cable company's line. Is that pretty much?
It's a channel on a microwave system that carries all different kinds of channels of video and audio, and we just have one of them.
And why can't you pick the main carrier off the air on top of Williams Hill? That isn't line of sight, or
no, we can't see Mount Toro, which is where our main transmitter is. It's just too far south, and there's too many mountains in the way.
Amazing.
Well, thank you very much, Robin, for the call.
You're welcome. Hang in there. I like it a lot.
Great. Thanks for the call.
Bye.
I love getting calls from down there. I don't go down there very much, so it's really nice to hear someone going, hey, we can hear you. We're listening. And
I like to hear that it sounds great.
Yeah, that's a good thing, too. And from Pacific Grove, Gene, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Thank you. I have two questions. I'll start with the first one.
Okay.
The first one is, how can there be KUSP 1 and 2 if you actually did this? Where would the second KUSP be?
we would be here. I mean, we would probably... originated from here in Santa Cruz, and it would be a second stream of programming, and you know you'd be able to select on your radio between the first channel of audio and the second channel of audio.
So is it 88.9 and 88.91?
No.
That's the
my
cool
radio doesn't let me do that.
Right, exactly. This is why you needed a digital transmission medium in order to make this possible, is that you manage to squash all the different bits that you need, to reproduce the audio into one stream centered around 88.9, and then it's up to the radio to figure out which bits are part of KUSP1 and which bits are part of KUSP2.
But how do I decide? How can I tell a radio anything?
Your new radio would have the feature to
have a button on it.
That's basically how it would work.
My second question is, a other public radio station, which I shall not name and which I never, I do not,
are you speaking
I do
of
not
KACU?
Contribute to
you,
anymore.
You can just say yes or no if you're talking about KACU.
Of course
we actually get along pretty well these days.
Well, that's good. I'm glad you guys do. I don't support them anymore. It's a talk radio station now. And they just went through a drive where they got a contribution of $75,000 from somebody or another, and I guess they matched it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to go there. They're just talk radio to me. What would that improve their radio, or they're looking to have the little thing you're talking about, button one and button two?
I've talked with John McNally's the general manager of KZ. We communicate frequently, and strategically, they're much more interested in the ability to have twice as many programs with a KAZU-1 and a KAZU-2 as opposed to either the multipath improvement that Brant was talking about or the audio quality improvements that
they're thinking to go back to music.
I think they have talked on the air about the idea of having a full-time classical music service on KAZU-2.
Oh, yeah.
So there would be, which is not something that is available in public radio in this area, although we do have a full-time commercial classical station, KBOC. That is certainly one possibility that would be available to public radio in this area, and in most of in many places where there's more than one public radio station, at least one of them is full-time classical.
Yeah. Are those radios already out there?
They've just started to come onto the market. The ones that are available now, by and large, are receivers that for car stereos that would replace the radio that came with your car. As new products come out for the holidays, there's supposed to be significantly more digital radio receivers available.
Even though they have the codec keeps on changing. I mean,
right. That's and again, think about MP3. For a second that. A lot of what has to do with the difference between how, one version of MP3 sounds and another has nothing to do with your computer and your software. It has a lot to do with how it's coded in the first place.
Okay.
And the same kind of logic, applies here.
Okay, thank you a lot, guys.
Thanks for the call.
Thanks for the call.
Yeah.
Okay, now we got Tom from Monterey, and Tom doesn't have a radio question. Tom, welcome to GeekSpeak. Hi.
I have a iMac with the current evolution of OS X. And I'm attempting to connect an old Apple LaserWriter to NT.
To NT?
Yes.
You mean being a print from NT to that printer?
No, but it's a 2NT LaserWriter.
Right.
I had one of those once upon a time.
And I'm using a router, and I got it to work briefly in OS 9 with a version of Word operating on 9, and then it stopped.
Even on OS 9?
I'm sorry?
Even in OS 9?
Yeah, it never worked on OS 10, and I kind of didn't expect it to.
Right. Yeah. I don't have a lot of advice for you, unfortunately. This is going to be a hard thing to fix. Did you, when you had OS 9, do you also have OS 10 installed on it?
Yeah, I mean, it's the OS.
So you're running Classic.
It's part of Panther.
Right. So you're running the Classic. Are you running as Classic, or are you running? Are you rebooting in OS 9?
No, I'm running as Classic.
Okay, that's going to be the problem right there. Is that it's OS 9 Classic is not the same as OS 9 by itself. So you could try to reboot in OS 9 and see if it works. And if that's the case, what you need to do is trick OS 10 into loading more of the features of OS 9, but that's not really going to work. Basically, the extensions in OS 9 Classic that would be controlling the printer and therefore the drivers of the printer,
right,
are going to be under a layer of OS 10 or wrapped. OS 10 is going to be wrapped around it to some degree. So that's the problem, is that that wrapping is causing the driver not to work the same way it did when it was first created. So you can try. What you can do is go up to Control Panel Startup, I think it is, and just choose OS 9 and reboot your machine, and you'll be in OS 9 mode completely. See if it's working there. And then if it does work that way, you could, of course, whenever you want to print, redo that. But, I mean, that's basically where the advice stops.
Okay. That. All right.
Thank you, Tom, for the call.
Sure, thank you.
Good luck.
Bye.
Bye. And Clint from Santa Cruz will be with him in just a minute. You're welcome to call in, like Clint, like Tom, like Gene, like Robin, 476-2800. Toll free at 1-800-655-5877. We're talking with the station manager and the station engineer about digital radio and KSP's plans. Again, 476-2800 or toll free at 1-800-655-5877. And Clint, welcome to Geekspeak. KSP.
Hello. I have a RDS on my car stereo. And I've noticed that in the last couple months it went from the station numeral, station identification of KUSP to Central Coast Public.
Yeah, and it's not long enough to read it all, right?
It kind of scrolls through, and sometimes it goes Public Coast Central, or it scrolls through, and it's
What's up with that, guys? I saw that too.
We've been having some problems with our RDS encoder. We have an agreement with a company that actually has the subcarrier that is throwing the RDS out there.
And they do paging, right?
They do paging to trucks and that sort of thing. We're kind of at the mercy of how they program the RDS encoder on the system, and I'm attempting to get back into their system so that I can correct this problem. You're not the first person that's mentioned this to me. So
basically, we're getting some revenue from a company that offers paging services.
Right.
And because we're doing that, they have control of that subcarrier, which gives the call letters and such.
Right. And we're supposed to be able to get in there and program what is being sent through the RDS encoder, but this is not necessarily always the case.
Okay. So there it is. We're working on it.
Okay.
Thank you very much for the call.
Thank you.
Now, of course, what's really being transmitted probably is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP.
Right.
But some radios do that RDS information, that displaying, differently.
Right.
And that's kind of the thing, is there wasn't a really standard on how many characters you should... I mean, there's a support for how many characters you can put in there, but what the radio actually does with it, whether
and how
or whether it shows a word, and then 10 seconds later it shows the next word.
This is actually a project that the Corporation for Public Broadcasting is very concerned about right now with regard to digital FM, because, you know, having had the experience that you guys just described with RDS, with a lot more possible data going, that winds up in a visual form, as part of digital FM, CPB wants to make sure that, we don't have the same issues arise where we're not really sure that what the stations send is what the consumer's actually able to see or print out or whatever.
Right.
So, in fact, if you're looking for something to do as a geek and you've got the afternoon free, this afternoon is the cutoff date for a $250,000 grant to work on that. So underemployed geeks in the audience can go to cpb.org and learn all about getting in on that research project.
Great. Thank you.
Anytime.
I don't think I'll be doing that today. I don't think I'll be able to get a grant out in time.
RFPs are us, right?
Right. You're welcome to join the conversation. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. We are talking with the station engineer and station manager of KUSP about digital radio and the plans for KUSP. And let's go ahead and talk about the plans at this point. We do want to have a second carrier. Well, first off, what would if we did have a KUSP2 and a KDVH2? If we had like a right. second line that if yeah. you had digital radio you could view, mm-hmm. What would we be putting on it?
That's exactly the first question that we as a public radio station need to figure out. One of the things that's happening, not totally coincidentally, at the same time that you know the technology for digital FM is firming up, is that our radio station is about to engage in the first major rewrite of its strategic plan in a long, long time. This is a project that
this has to do with KUSP being a nonprofit.
Well, yeah. The whole thing that we do as a public service organization is we haven't really looked at what we want to do in terms of programming in that way in a long time, and the possibility of having two channels that we can carry, where for the past 32 years it's only been one thing at a time, could change a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And so over the between now and next spring, we're going to look at that as an organization. The volunteers who program the station, the station's new community advisory board, which is composed of listeners from all kinds of backgrounds, from all parts of our coverage area, and the management staff, we're going to get together and we're going to think through what we need to do as an organization.
So in
and this question is one of the most important ones I think we need to talk about.
And right now, if we all of a sudden some magic stuff happened and tomorrow Brent came in and went, I just upgraded KSP.
Right.
We found $75,000 and our main right. carrier is now digital. Surprise.
Surprise.
And April Fool's, by the way. what would be the thing?
We do play the lottery.
What
here,
would right? be? The, I mean, the thing that I've heard that might be something to be carried is a time shift of our main carrier. So our night shows that happen in the middle of the night that are amazing shows that no one can stay up for, or not everyone mm-hmm. can stay up
right.
for, would just be played during the day, so you'd have that ability to hear more of the station than you could normally hear.
That was one of the when I as manager I get to talk to a lot of our listeners,
one of
supporters.
The ideas. Yeah,
one of the privileges of the job, right? And that's something that when I've asked this question, that's something people have brought up to me. Actually one of the shows that comes up a lot in that context is this one. Even though you can listen to Geek Speak.
10 o'clock on Fridays.
Right? Right, 10 o'clock on Friday. It's not that there are people who listen to the who would listen to this show who just flat aren't available at 10 o'clock
right.
on Friday morning. And
now, of course, GeekSpeak right. just happens to be lucky enough that we're geeks and we have all the shows archived on KUSP,
right.
GeekSpeak.org.
Yeah.
to hear them.
Right.
But driving in your car, most of them. Today's will be here later today. So,
and that's another element of this is: are there things you could you get to the same place? Could you meet the needs of the listener, in a way that's less expensive, say, or than
more convenient,
more convenient than mm-hmm. digital conversion? And as you get more Wi-Fi and make it possible for people to access the internet in a mobile fashion or more universally wherever they're going, it might be better and cheaper and easier to just take all those shows, store them at KUSP.org. Or GeekSpeak.org or whatever, and let people listen to them anytime they want. That right. might be a better solution.
We got a lot of content, and right now we're basically using
we
one
use
a, stream
yes,
of it.
Use once, throw away.
Yeah,
that's not so cool.
Yeah. All right. Well, from Boulder Creek, Sheila, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi.
Hi.
I had a question that I think is geek related. I have a business in Boulder Creek, and we were called a couple of weeks ago by a company asking if we wanted to do a web listing, and we said no, absolutely not. And 2 days ago I got a bill from this company that said 2-year web listing has an account number and payable upon receipt to $389.95.
Ooh, dangerous.
So I thought big companies might pay something like this automatically because they
right
don't necessarily, the person who pays the bills doesn't necessarily talk to the people who call in.
Well, my first recommendation is that don't pay for a service like that. You don't need it. It's completely, the internet, you can find stuff. You don't.
Oh, it's bogus.
Yeah. Totally bogus. But the question is, will this company press this issue and then take you to collections and damage your credit?
It's not even so much that is, has this company contacted other businesses or individuals and done the same thing?
Well, the first thing I would do is just write a letter back and respond to them with that letter that says, I never asked for the service. You called me. I turned it down. I do not want to pay for it. Remove me from the service if necessary. Whatever it takes, I don't want to pay for this. And then if they do press the issue, of course, do the normal format thing that you would do with a with somebody requesting a bill that, you're not supposed to owe. And I don't run a business, so I don't know what that is. But I would assume it's just kind of a – it's called a phishing technique. And
right.
Yeah. It's basically them trying to trick money out of people.
Well, they have a toll-free number, so I, of course, called that because I wanted to talk to somebody. And not only do you not get the whole name of the company when you call the toll-free number, but it says, mailbox not available, please hang up.
Yeah.
And then we tried their website, and there's nothing on it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so, definitely a phishing technique.
Yeah.
Just respond with, no way.
Right.
See
partly, I wanted to warn other people, if you get this kind of thing, resist.
Good.
If you didn't. You know, refuse and resist. If you didn't say you wanted it, don't do it.
Good
great
advice.
Sheila. Good advice. Thank you for the
great.
Call and the
thanks.
Suggestion.
And thanks for the program. I love listening to it.
Thanks.
Bye now.
From Santa Cruz, Sue, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi. I have a non-geek question about digital radio. I just turn on the radio, and I expect it to work like the lights. And since I moved to Santa Cruz, I can't get any of the little tiny stations I used to listen to. And I'm wondering
Where did you move from?
Oh, just over the hill in Rapid City.
Yeah.
But I used to listen to Stanford Radio and little tiny stations.
Yeah, the valley, on the other side of the hill, the valley is actually a pretty clean shot. You can get a lot of different stations.
Yeah.
But here on the coast, there's a lot of bending in mountains. And
it's Radio Wonderland over there and over here. So I'm wondering when everybody was streaming on the web before they stopped because of, the money it cost for
it's
music.
It's legal issues, yeah.
Uh-huh. I'm wondering if when there's digital radio, will we have a big wide range? Like, let's say I wanted to listen to, like, Ohio something or other. I never would, but if I did, would I be able to get it?
That's more satellite radio.
Yeah, that doesn't cover digital. Digital is basically upgrading the transmitters that currently exist to allow the stations that own those transmitters to carry more content. So I doubt that Terry would choose to go and syndicate Ohio radio. We might. that comes out of the plan for KOSP.
Okay.
The call also raises one of the more interesting policy decisions that the federal government made early on in the whole consideration of how digital FM or digital radio would work, not necessarily digital FM. And as I said a while back, this has been something that's been percolating for about 15 years now. And early on, in response to the desires of the broadcast industry, especially the commercial radio industry, but I think most of the establishment public radio saw the world in the same way, they wanted to create an environment that basically replicated the way things are now, where you had local stations that had different coverage ranges depending on what their power was and where their antenna was. There were other technologies available and that were actually at a more advanced state of development early on in the project that would have significantly increased the number of listening options available and eliminated some of the coverage differences between smaller stations and bigger stations that have been a fact of American radio since the very beginning. And the industry strongly opposed that, and with a timely assist from the military-industrial complex, who was using the frequencies that might have been used for, reinventing U.S. radio, the frequencies that might have been used were in use for, for defense purposes.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, the idea died, but it could have come out differently, and we could have had, a very different radio world in the process of changing from analog to digital.
Speaking of other radio worlds, what about satellite? She just mentioned satellite radio. That you don't have a transmitter on mountains and stuff. You have them in space.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there are transmitters on mountains, actually. There are repeaters.
Oh, there are.
There are terrestrial repeaters.
Okay. But they are doing kind of a different frequency than traditional FM or AM.
Mm-hmm.
So you guys scared by this? Is it damaging radio? Is it light? Is it important? What is it doing?
It's really early to tell because the number of people who can listen to satellite radio, there are two major commercial satellite radio services in the country that are technically substantially similar. One, XM has been more financially successful than the other, Sirius. Both of them are losing gobs of money. And relative to the number of people who can listen to terrestrial radio, the number of people listening to satellite radio right now is fairly small.
Mm-hmm.
It could expand. It probably will expand, and it probably will change the way that that people use radio services. What effect that's going to have on public radio and is, depends a lot on what you do for programming. It's much easier to imagine a station like KUSP, where most of our programming is produced locally and has, we hope, at least some local connection to, you know, the communities we serve, to stay relevant in a world where, say, everybody, you know, or almost everybody has access to national programming through the satellite, than a station that depends on national programming for all of its program schedule.
Okay, we got 30 seconds for you to answer this. If you had the money right now, someone gives some listener just donates $150,000 to KOSP,
right,
what would you do with it from a technical perspective?
What I do is get better at producing the kinds of things we do now. I think we could invest in the places we produce and the way we produce things so that we could be more, you know, produce more relevant programming that would matter more to people. I think that would be my highest priority.
Gray Wolf Computer Systems has provided a grant in support of this program. Gray Wolf Computer Systems offers custom computer systems and personalized service for repairs, upgrades, and networks in the East Cliff Village Shopping Center in Santa Cruz. The geek today in the house was Miles Elam. The other geeks in the house were Terry Green and Brent Barrett. Terry Green is, of course, the station manager for KUSP, been part of the community radio movement in California since 1985. And Brent Barrett is in the broadcast industry at the age of 16 at KOL Radio in Seattle. They're both long-term geeks in the radio field, and luckily we have them here at KUSP to support, well, the station you listen to every day, KUSP. This is Central Coast KUSP, Santa Cruz, KBDH San Arto. We're on the web at kusp.org. Thank you both, Terry and
Thanks,
Grant,
Lance.
Thank
for
you.
Here
for being here today. And, of course, Miles, thanks. And to our producer, Maggie Cleveland, for answering phones. Coming up in a few minutes is Open Road. First, we're going to have a little bit of NPR news. And this is Geek Speak. I'm Lyle Troxell for KUSP. Thanks for tuning in.